Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Selling Greenville, your favorite real estate podcast here in Greenville, South Carolina. I'm your host, as always, Stan McCune, realtor right here in the Greenville area of South Carolina. You can find all of my contact information in the show notes if you need to reach out to me for any of your real estate needs. And just a reminder, as always, please reach out to Piper Insurance Group, who is sponsoring this episode for any of your home, auto, or umbrella insurance needs. They're an independent insurance agency, meaning that they can quote multiple different insurance companies. By the way, I've heard some bad things from some insurance companies lately in terms of how they're handling Helene, so it's good to not just get locked into one. It's good to have a company that can be on your side that can help you out with multiple different insurance companies. In fact, I talked to someone recently, a client of mine, who switched over to Piper. And I should get paid extra for this because this is a true story. So someone that recently switched over to Piper, and they connected my client with an insurance carrier that they had never heard of. Helene happened, massive tree fell on a house. And that insurance company that they had never heard of, and quite frankly, I had never heard of them either, was incredible. They did a great job. They handled the claim, went above and beyond, even replaced a roof that wasn't directly impacted by the tree. The tree had fallen on the front porch. So, that's a really good thing that they're independent. And that's something to keep in mind as you quote different insurance carriers. Piper Insurance Group, though, they're licensed in South Carolina, North Carolina, and Georgia. They help with investment properties as well, flips, ground-up new construction, commercial, etc. So contact them for a free quote today. And if you like the content on this show, please like, rate, review, subscribe. All of those good things. Make sure you don't miss future content. All right. Today, I'm going to be doing something a little bit different. We're going to have a little bit of fun, and that's because if you know me, which some of you do, some of you don't, I'm on Twitter a lot. I like Twitter a lot. I mostly use it for sports-related stuff, but I also follow it very closely for things related to politics, for things related to the economy, for the housing market. I have a really curated list of people that I follow on there, and it can be a great source of information if you follow the right people. That's the key thing. Well, I saw a very interesting thread on Twitter recently. And I had some opinions on it. And I said, you know what? This would be a fun little podcast episode to do, not specifically about Greenville, but this is something that, you know, we could talk about what people are thinking and what ideas are out there, what ideas are right, what ideas are wrong with regard to a pretty innocent Twitter post about becoming a homeowner. So we're just going to jump right in. I'm going to actually share my screen so you guys can see the tweet or the post, since apparently, you know, Elon Musk changed Twitter to X. That's why you keep hearing people say X, formerly known as Twitter, or however they say it. So Elon Musk changes to X. So technically, it's not supposed to be not supposed to be tweeting anymore. It's supposed to be posting, but everyone still says tweeting. All right. So I've got a tweet here, post, whatever, by Amanda Goetz, I don't know how to pronounce it, but she's got a pretty big Twitter following, actually. She has 111,000 followers, so I don't know what exactly she's doing, but she's doing some good things. But she says this: I'm 39 and never owned a house. I spent 20 years in Chicago, New York City, and now Miami. After learning my rent was increasing 18%, I decided it's time to invest my money. Today, I'm going house hunting with a realtor in the suburbs. Quote, parenthetical, never thought I'd live in the suburbs. What advice do you have when looking at six different houses in one day? Well, I just want to start by saying, with regard to this specific post, I've been in some classes recently. I just finished yesterday. I did an eight-hour class that was called Pricing Strategy Advisor. And the teacher for that class, who's also taught some other classes I've taken, said he will never show more than five houses in one day to one client. And that's because they all start to blend in together after you see five. So perhaps one piece of advice that I would give is don't look at six different houses in one day. Now, I personally don't make that rule for my clients if they really want to look at, if they really want to look at six houses, I'm not going to arbitrarily say 5 is the number, you know, like this instructor said. But that is a lot of homes to look at in one day. I mean, that would be an entire day of work for me as a realtor. You have to factor in lunches or meals in there. If there's little kids, which frequently there are when you're talking about a 39-year-old, that's a whole thing. So my first piece of advice is don't bite off more than you can chew looking at homes in one day. Also, before we get into the comments, because the comments are what I really want to focus on here, the idea that she thought that she would never live in the suburbs, I find that to be interesting. People think of people have odd misconceptions about the suburbs, I feel like. Suburbs are very diverse. We have in Greenville, for instance, we have some suburbs in the east side of Greenville that are really nice, really unique homes, really well-constructed, mature trees. You know, you feel like you're in just a really nice neighborhood, and there's, you know, places to shop, places to eat, all that very close nearby. Now, is it walkable to those places? No, that's what the suburbs are. The suburbs basically are walkable within themselves, but they're not walkable to amenities, generally speaking, besides parks. I think a lot of people, when they think of suburbs, they just think of these production-built homes, you know, that are lined up in a row. They all look exactly the same. Yes, those are suburbs as well, but that's not the only thing that suburbs are. There are some really fantastic neighborhoods and there are some fantastic production-built neighborhoods too, but there are some really fantastic neighborhoods that are unique, nice, even some that are luxurious, that are, at the end of the day, the suburbs. So I would say to anyone who is kind of fixated on, I need to live in a city, think outside the box. There is a way to enjoy what you're looking for in terms of a city lifestyle without being in the city. Not too many people do I know that stay in the city long term. And by the city specifically, I'm talking about downtown Greenville. Eventually, they get tired of it. You know, it's like, yeah, it's nice for a season, but eventually you want more space, a yard, you know, a fenced in space for the animals, for the kids, all that kind of stuff. And it's really hard to get in a urban downtown environment. All right, let's move on to Amy Nixon at Texas Runner DFW. She also has a pretty substantial following, 59,300 followers. That's because she's a housing and economic analyst. And so she always has, interesting things to say. I don't always agree with her takes, but here's what she said. Two pieces of advice: focus on things you can't change: location, lot size, and layout. Three L's: location, lot size, and layout. Now, let me just say this. You can change the layout, right? That's a misnomer if you think that you can't change that. But most people just don't want to change it, right? It's a ton of work to change your layout, to remove walls and all of that. So I understand why she's including that, but keep in mind, that's not necessarily accurate. So focus on things you can't change: location, lot size, layout, busy streets or noisy things nearby, public school rating. Okay? I think it's pretty good advice. You really should think about, okay, what are the things that I can change? What are the things that I can't change, right? And there are some things that are outside of your control, completely outside of your control. Factor that in as well. You're never going to be able to eliminate everything. And I'll probably be talking about this here in a second, but one question I get from people sometimes is, if it's a home near some vacant land, well, what's going to happen with that vacant land? Well, that vacant land has been vacant the entire time that it's existed, most likely. So if we look at history, it would tell us that probably nothing is going to happen, but there's no guarantee, right? And there are things that we can look at to try to determine if something like vacant land is going to be, you know, developed or used in one way or another. But there's no way to control that. And so you have to recognize that even though you have more control as a homeowner than you do as a renter, you still don't have full control over everything around you when you're purchasing a home. Your neighbors, they can change, right? I've had that. I've had situations where I went from great neighbors to terrible neighbors very quickly. That can change. And so you need to be flexible in your mind when it comes to this kind of stuff. Okay, back to Amy's post or her comment. She said, number two, drive by the house and neighborhood morning and night. Look for kids, bikes, basketball, hoops, people walking dogs. Okay. Yeah, I think that this is great advice as well. I tell my clients frequently, you know, if they're concerned about a neighborhood, really the best thing you can do is drive by at different times of the day, right? See what the traffic flow is. See what people are like. Is loud music playing at night? Are there obnoxious kids running around? Things like that. If you have specific concerns, that is the best way to address them. And as I already said, your neighbors can change, right? And they will, right? But some neighborhoods are more prone to kind of collecting, we'll say, people that like to blast loud music at night, or collecting feral children, or whatever the case may be. And unfortunately, me as a realtor, due to steering law, I shouldn't say unfortunately, it feels unfortunate because it feels like a way that I could help my clients, but I can't. But it is for the better good. It does prevent realtors from doing things that they shouldn't. Steering laws prevent me from really commenting much on the neighborhood. And me as a realtor, you know, I can't tell people, you know, is this a safe neighborhood? All I can do is tell you, you know, hey, here's a way to look at crime stats. Here's a way to look up registered sex offenders, things like that. I can't weigh into that. I can only talk about material facts. And once we start to get into things like that, that get into demographical related sorts of things and potential steering law violations, I simply can't weigh into that at all. Okay. Back to Amy's comment. She said, also, if you buy a new developing neighborhood near any empty land, find out what the city has zoned and planned to build there. Many in Texas find a lovely backyard view of a sunset over an open field soon becomes a strip mall. And she has a nice laughing face emoji. Yeah, so this plays into what I was saying earlier. You can't control the vacant land around you. And yeah, if you can contact the city or the county to see if anything is planned or zoned there, but that can change tomorrow. So there's not a whole lot. Yeah, you might be able to find out if there's something in the docket currently by doing that, but that is definitely not something you can control. So use some common sense. Think about, okay, if you're really concerned about the vacant land being developed, think about it logically. How is the land being currently used? Is it being used at all? Where is it located? Is it in a floodplain? If it's in a floodplain, it's probably, at least in Greenville, not going to be developed. There's a lot of different ways to kind of piece together, you know, whether land might be developed in the future or not. But that, at the end of the day, you can't really plan anything off of that, because that land could get sold to a developer. It could get, you know, the owner could die and pass it on to the heirs. They could decide to develop it. There's a lot of things that could happen. And so you cannot control your neighbors. Really, the only guarantee, if you're really in for a, you know, wanting a view, wanting no neighbors around you, the only way to guarantee that is just buying a lot of acreage. Like, that's just the end all be all when it comes to that. Buy a ton of acreage, put your home in the middle of it, and then you can pretty much guarantee that you will not be seeing people. Outside of that, sorry, but you're kind of stuck. Scott Davis. Scott Davis is also a good account. He's got 3,070 followers, so he's a smaller account. He focuses more on, I believe, commercial real estate. He says, if you're looking at two stories, focus on ones with the master downstairs. It will increase your longevity in the house and improve your resale value. Yes, so that is true. Of course, nowadays we're supposed to say primary suite rather than master suite. But yeah, if you're looking for two stories, having the primary suite on the main level absolutely makes a difference with your home value, with your value in the future, and with the flexibility for using the home. And so that's certainly a major consideration for people when they are looking at homes. Now, if you're not planning to, if you're not super concerned about those things, and really you're a first-time home buyer, you just need to buy something, getting a two-story home with the primary suite on the second level, that's a way to save costs right away, because you're not going to be competing against, you know, any baby boomers who are still a huge part of this market. None of them want to mess with stairs right now. They're all at that age where they're either wanting to avoid stairs or they know that that day is coming. And, you know, you're eliminating a lot of others that would just prefer to have that main level primary bedroom. And so I would tell people that stay nimble when it comes to this. Consider what your actual needs are and what your priorities are. But what Scott said is on a high level correct. Nancy Lothar, PhD, I've never heard of Nancy. She has 480 followers, not too many. She says, buy in a neighborhood where many parents are well off. I'm going to correct some of the grammar on some of these because some of it's bad. Buy in a neighborhood where many parents are well off enough to send their kids to private school, still choose the neighborhood public schools. Those neighbors are invested in their communities. Not sure. And Amanda replied funny. She replied, so real, was her response to that comment. So real. This is baloney to me. Okay. And this is perhaps why Nancy only has 480 followers. Which I don't have many followers on Twitter either, but that's cause I'm just like posting nonsense about sports all day. Buy in a neighborhood where parents are well off enough to send their kids to private school, but choose the neighborhood public schools. Listen, they are not doing that because they are invested in their communities. Let's just cut to the chase, right? Now, perhaps some of my listeners, you might be someone that fits in that category. I'm not saying that every single person that is wealthy enough to send their kids to private school, but choose public school instead, is doing that for nefarious purposes. Not saying that. I know that there are people that choose the public school option when they don't have to because they do want their kids to be a part of the community, a part of the area, and get to know kids in that area, right? Because private schools, you might get kids from all over the place. You're not going to get necessary kids in your community. So there is some truth to that. But on a high level, I have not seen that be consistent, generally speaking, in the market. In fact, what usually happens is wealthy people kind of congregate together, right? That's been happening for forever. And then they end up gentrifying the public schools. They make the public schools basically like private schools. So I don't think that this is very hard to measure anyway, quite frankly. But I wouldn't put a whole lot of stock in that, right? I guess maybe the simplest way to look at this and think about this is, you know, the schools that are the quote unquote award winning schools are probably the schools that have more of those wealthier, well to do people that could send their kids to the private schools but choose the public schools instead, and that then raises the education level for that private school. I'm not saying that's right, and I'm not, you know, none of this is me saying that any of this is inherently good. I'm just responding to this comment. She said something, and I don't necessarily agree with it. If I agreed with it, I would say focus on the school rating, and that will tell you a lot about what's happening when it comes to the school. REI Soleil, Ray Soleil, 2134 followers. Okay, decent. Has some references to crypto in his profile. He says, a great reminder that while owning a home has its perks, using it as an investment vehicle isn't always the best strategy. For long-term growth, options like Bitcoin might actually be a better investment. Amy replied, my kids can't live in Bitcoin. And, oh, I just love it. I love it. Now, Listen, I'm not a crypto hater, okay? I do own some Bitcoin. I do own some crypto. It's not something that I have a lot of. I just have it just in the off chance that it takes off. You know, I don't want to be completely left behind. But let's just be honest. This is terrible advice. And nothing that I'm saying is investment advice, but that guy is surely giving investment advice. I don't think it's good advice at all to say focus on crypto rather than focusing on real estate. These are two very different things. And he also focused on the whole idea that it's a better investment. He said it might actually be a better investment. He was careful in his wording there. But Amanda responded, "My kids can't live in Bitcoin." Her point is that let's just take the investment argument aside. Real estate serves an actual purpose, right? And currently, crypto's uses are pretty limited. And, you know, most investment tools are pretty limited. And so this is why real estate, first and foremost, when you're buying your primary residence, you should be focused on yourself and your needs, first and foremost. Secondarily should be the investment piece, right? Because real estate goes up and down. It's been kind of going down lately. And so the fact of the matter is that focus on yourself first so that you're happy, right? So that you're happy, you get what you want. And then if you do that, likely you have things that other people want, and that will result in your home appreciating. Will it appreciate to the level as other investment products? No, of course it won't. Real estate is a safe investment, and as such, it doesn't usually invest astronomically like other investment products do. But that is the beauty of real estate, is that you can kind of have your cake and eat it. As I've got a sneeze coming on here, try to suppress that. Real estate serves a purpose while also typically being a smart investment choice. As long as you make the right decision, don't overspend, all that kind of good stuff. Telling someone don't buy a house, buy Bitcoin instead, not a fan. Monica Sawyer, 929 followers, artist, designer, educator, sharer of resources, super mom of two, blah, blah, blah. She says, think about your domestic routines. If you cook, pretend like you are cooking. What's the cooking area like? What's the feel of going back and forth to the fridge, to the stove, to the sink, to the dishwasher? Where's the laundry related to the bedrooms? The look of stuff you can fix, but the placements not so much. Again, you can fix the placements. It's just expensive, right? A full kitchen remodel, all that kind of stuff. It gets pricey. I think this is pretty good advice for Monica. Think about when you're in a home, it is smart. You know, I can't tell you how many times I'm with clients that they will walk in the kitchen and they'll just kind of look around and be like, wow, nice countertops, nice cabinets, blah, blah, blah. And then just move on to the next room. It's like, hold on. Interact with this. Open the refrigerator. Open the cabinets. Open the stove. Open the dishwasher. Interact with this kitchen a little bit. This is a very important part of your home. One of the most important parts of your home. You need to get a sense. How do you even know? Are the cabinets slow closed or do they slam shut? Are they loud? Are the drawers slow closed but the cabinets aren't? The doors are not. There's all sorts of very small things like that that you can identify. Look for the outlets, right? Is there an island? Are there outlets on the island? Where are they? Where are they placed? Is it logical? What would you do with the island? Think through all of these different things. Monica's right. Think about what that home would be like for you if you were actually living there. David De Cespedes, Notion Coach, with 6,540 followers. He's a certified Notion consultant. No idea what that means. Ex-architect. He said, review flood maps for each area. Flooding varies quite a bit based by neighborhood, and even sections within the same area could be far more prone to flooding. And Amanda responded again, Florida things, so real. I love her so real responses. So I always check flood maps for my clients. Excuse me. Floodplains in Greenville are a problem. Generally, not from the standpoint that there are a ton of them, but just from the standpoint that it's really a killer to home values. And not to mention that we just had a major hurricane that came through the area that caused a lot of flooding. So that's really front of mind. Probably flood insurance costs are going to start to be going up in the area. And so so this is something when a client, you know, sends me homes that they want to look at, I start doing a little bit of research on my end. One of the first things I look at is this in a floodplain, right? Because that is a huge, huge part of the equation. So it's fine if my clients want to also do some of that digging. They're welcome to. It's not as intuitive as you might think, so it might be confusing, but it's a great idea to look at flood maps and to get a sense of what's going on flood-wise. As a realtor, I try to get out in front of that with my client. We'll do maybe a couple more here. Sean Michael Floyd. Adventurer, dealmaker, contrarian, curious. I sell software to governments, okay? He says, location matters. Don't use your max budget on it. There will be expenses that pop up. Okay, so yeah, first sentence, location matters. Yes. There's a reason why people say location, 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 right? Those are the three top things when it comes to home ownership. He says, don't use your max budget on it. There will be expenses that pop up. Yeah, that is true. I don't exactly know what he's getting at in terms of using your max budget on it. I guess maybe he's saying, you know, if your budget is 400 to 500,000, don't go all the way up to 500,000 in order to get the prime location. But I'm not sure that I would agree with that. And this isn't because I'm a realtor and I just like my clients to buy the most expensive homes available. Location is just something that you can't change. Right. And so, yeah, there will be expenses that pop up, but there will also be problems that pop up in other locations if they are inferior for what you're looking for your lifestyle. So you need to consider your lifestyle first and foremost. Obviously, in terms of max budget, obviously, you always need to make sure that you have money in reserve. Home ownership does cost money. It can be expensive. There are things that come up. There are things that pop up. And that's just the reality of the situation. So don't get caught with your pants down on something like that and just deplete your reserves. And so I would agree with Sean Michael Floyd on that point. But generally speaking, I would say you need to really prioritize location, right? That is the thing that you cannot change after you buy a home. And that is something that a prime location will typically always remain a prime location. That's not always the case, but that's a pretty good, you know, within a 30-year window, typically prime locations remain prime. And so that's something to consider there. Tian looks like he's into AI. He has 1,317 followers. He says, see if you can get buyer agent commission rebate. It's money that buyer agent can give to you. And despite what some agents may tell you, it's legal in many states. All right, so I'm a realtor. And so I just want to discuss this, you know, real quick. How many times do you go into a restaurant and eat a nice meal and then ask your waiter or your waitress if they can pay for part of your meal out of their paycheck? How many times do you do that? That's what Tian is suggesting that this person do with regard to her buyer agent. Now, here's the thing. Buyer agent compensation, it's all negotiable, right? We've been through this. This is a big thing this year that we've had a lot of talking points about this. It's negotiable, but it's negotiable on the front end, right? Now, if she's already looking at six homes, most likely she has already selected her buyer agent, because now the rules are you have to have a written agreement in place with a buyer agent prior to showing any homes, prior to viewing any homes. And what that means functionally, we do have an option for a for just showing homes without someone being represented by a buyer agent. But I'm not going to show six homes. You know, I already said that, there's a trainer who said he won't show more than five homes to a client. Well, I'm not going to have that rule, but I'm sure not going to show six homes to a non-client. Okay, that is a no. That is a deal breaker because I'm taking an entire day away from my clients to give to someone that might not ever give me business. That makes no sense. I'm not going to do it. And so this conversation, we would have already had the compensation conversation. We would have already agreed to that on the front end. Now, if my client comes to me in the middle and then says, hey, can you actually give me a rebate on your paycheck? Can you actually discount your paycheck in order to help me? I'm going to say no. And quite frankly, you want me to say no. You know why? Because you're negotiating with me and you're not going to win. And that's because I'm a good negotiator and I'm going to negotiate for you in the same way. When the other agent comes to me and they make a ridiculous request like that, I'm going to say, no, my client's not going to do that. And then they try to make it more reasonable. They try to explain it. They try to you know, they try to get into logic. Show me, you know, if it's another agent, show me comp, show me, you know, show me this, show me that. And I'm going to go at that point into hardline negotiating and show them why what my client is offering them is the best. Or if I'm representing the seller, same thing. I'm going to show them, you know, I had one buyer agent that sent me comps to try to prove to me that my price was wrong. You think that that went well with me? You think that I didn't run comps prior to listing the home? So I lit that agent up. And listen, you're not gonna win that battle with me. I'm a data guy. You guys know. Anyone that listens to this knows I'm a data guy. You're not gonna win that with me. My clients, at the end of the day, if they try to come in and they try to renegotiate something that a contract that we've already agreed with, the reality is that that's not the right approach to take. And I am going to negotiate in the way that I negotiate with everyone. I'm going to simply show that I'm sorry, this is not how this works. We agreed to something and we're going to follow through on it. And I'm going to work my hardest for you. In the same negotiation tactics that I'm using right now, if I were just to fall over in that moment, if the moment someone asked me, hey, can you just give me some money out of your paycheck? And I just said, wow, yeah. Yeah, you know, I hate confrontation and I really feel bad in this moment. I'm just going to go ahead and do it. What do you think I'm doing when a confrontational agent comes to me and tries to attack my client and attack my client's offer and make suggestions that my client's being unreasonable? And I'm just going to, you know, if I were that person that avoided the confrontation with my client, who I have a good relationship with, what do you think I'm going to do with someone that I'm at arm's length with? Another agent that I don't know super well. It's not going to go over the way you think it is. You're going to end up losing money in the long run. You go with an agent that's just willing to concede everything to you, they're going to concede everything to the other agents that they deal with. And so this was one that I was looking forward to getting to this question, because I know that some people would hear that and immediately go, oh, that's an interesting thought. It's not as interesting. It's actually counterproductive in many ways. And I'm not just saying that because I'm a realtor. I'm saying that because I have seen in real life how some agents you can just bulldoze in negotiation. Those are the ones that if a client with no negotiating skills can bulldoze over their agent, imagine what another agent experience in negotiating is going to do in that situation. They're going to completely bulldoze over them in that situation. And that's not the kind of agent you want representing you. That's all for today's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Thank you so much for listening. Please like, rate, review, subscribe. Listen, I've not gotten a whole lot of reviews from you guys lately. I would really appreciate, I don't just say that at the beginning of every episode. Please leave reviews, right? Please like, please subscribe. I want more subscribers. Get the show out to as many people as possible. Show me that you appreciate this content. That is The only thing I ask, in addition to you using me as my realtor and you using Piper Insurance Group, both of our contact informations are in the show notes. Thank you guys again. We will talk again next time.